Evening, everyone. This is Gully from the Wolves Fancast. Welcome to your latest episode. Spoke to the gaffers and I've managed to wrangle a post this week. Don't tell HR, whatever you do. We're obviously recording immediately in the aftermath of the Man City game. We've got quite a bit to cover as well. But I've got with me today Ryan Hooper.
Hello.
Daniel Hughes.
Evening.
And Jordan Russell.
Evening, gents.
Gents, before we crack on with our topics for discussion, how are you feeling immediately? Just a quick thought from each of you on today's game.
I guess for me, I wouldn't say I'm gutted. I'm just slightly disappointed is probably how I'd describe it. So we'll go into kind of probably why I'm feeling like that, and the others will share their views. But as a general mood, I'd just say on the ratio, just a little bit disappointed.
Is there a word in the dictionary between frustratingly relaxed?
That's
a bit
of a paradox, I think.
Mm. I'm frustrated because of the chance that we missed in the second half, but overall we were beaten by the better side. Kevin De Bruyne is literally in the top two best players in the world for me, behind me. But he's on another level, and when he's ticking like the way he was tonight, they're an hard team to beat.
Yeah, Jordan, what's your gut feeling today?
I think first half, Man City were probably the best team to come down Molineux since we've been promoted in a 45-minute spell, other than what I can remember of Liverpool in our first season back just before Christmas. I thought they were unbelievable. I think we made it a bit easy for them. I think we were slightly passive. But second half, we've gone toe-to-toe with them, and realistically, if you take your chances, we could have quite easily got a point out of that game.
Yeah, we'll delve much deeper into the goings on over the 90 minutes shortly, guys. But a lot has happened since our last pod record. And we'd like to bring you the really big news. So, of course, we're going to start with the Carabao Cup. Very quickly, boys. What the hell happened against Stoke?
We need to fast forward this because that was... I literally forgot all about it. It was that bad of a, it was that poor a game. I literally slept about 30 minutes of that match because I'd seen better Sunday League games.
It was shocking. It was truly shocking stuff. If anything there is to take from that game, Vitinha and Fabio Silva, obviously that's the first time we've seen anything of those two. Any initial thoughts on how they performed?
I think Vitinha showed glimpses, didn't he? And I think, we talked last season about a certain type of midfielder that we may need, and we'll probably look at that when we go into the game with the performances of who sort of was in centre midfield today. He looked decent, but yeah, I don't think anyone really came out of it in great light. Obviously, Silva as well, there's plenty to come for him. So yeah, it was a disappointing one, and not much, I think, value we can gain from that one, unfortunately.
Jordan, what did you make of the goal?
What, the Stoke goal? Well, I thought the game was proper shit. And I think the goal we conceded was proper shit. I don't really know what else we can say about it. We were just, like Dan's alluded to. I've played in better Sunday League games, many of them. We were that bad. It was a bit of a, for me, it was really disappointing though, because I felt like with us not being in Europa League this year, that it could have been a winnable competition for us. Not for this European conference bollocks. Don't really care about that, but actually just to win a trophy. I thought it would have been really nice for us to, we could have got a good run on it. But no excuses really. We played a strong enough team to beat a Stoke team, and we didn't turn up and we got what we deserved.
Yeah, I think that was the thing for me. Nuno obviously set out to try and win the game very much with the lineup that he announced. But we didn't turn up on the day. Stoke managed to score a goal and take the victory. The less said about John Ruddy's effort on that, the better, I think. But we'll move on. Obviously, there's been a lot of transfer activity over the past few days, all very exciting. We'll kind of get a nod to the most significant outgoing, which was Diogo Jota joining Liverpool. Now, there's been a lot made of this on social media. Was it the right decision? Yeah, and kind of a wide spectrum of views across the Wolves fan base. But Dan, start with you. Where do you think this sits on the good business scale?
Yeah, if anyone would have caught my little snippet that I did on the Anfield Wrap on Saturday, I just think when it all boils down to it, it's the best for all parties. He wasn't a guaranteed starter for Nuno anymore. I think his time had come when Podence was suspended for Sevilla and he didn't even get brought on off the bench until after Neto. His time was up. It's good money. His stats last season were awful, in my opinion. 7 league goals, 2 against Norwich, 2 against Brighton. It's not good enough. 45 million is a steal. He might go on to be worth 80 million, but not for Wolves. Good business.
Ryan, what do you think?
It always disappointing to see him go. I think, you know, the thing is with Jota, I think probably different to, in my opinion, other players who have moved on like Doc, who I felt we'd probably reached our maximum with. You know, we sold a player, 23. Yeah, okay, you can look at the stats in the league. That, you know, they don't look good on paper, of course. But with his age, what he offers to the team and the ability to improve, for me, you know, he hadn't reached his peak and it was disappointing to see him go. But I think ultimately when the champions come calling, if you can command that type of fee, it's great. So you can look at it in one way and say, yeah, he hasn't deserved to start this season because the form of Podence previously and Neto as well, you know, far outweigh Jota deserving a starting role that was pretty much his, you know, 18 months ago. But for me, I've always been a fan of Jota and continue to be a great fan of his ability. So for me, disappointed to go for him to go because he's been one of my favourite players of this era. But I think ultimately he wanted to go. So if a player wants to go, to get that level of money and then, as we'll come to in a moment, be able to use it to strengthen in other areas where we may be a bit light, then whilst I'm disappointed, I can't really have many complaints with the sale.
Yeah, I mean, obviously 45 million sounds like very good business based on his recent form. But Jordan, I found it quite interesting what Nuno said about, well, what's been reported about the fact that his decision was made kind of earlier on in pre-season. There's almost an acceptance that they were going to move Jota on. What do you think of that?
I think how quickly the story broke. I think it was a shock to everyone, really. Felt like obviously something was up when he turned up against Stoke and then left pretty quickly, that something was going on. But I still didn't think he'd be getting sold that quickly. So it's obviously been in the pipeline for some time. And our ex-illustrious leader did say in the summer that he'd heard that Jeff Shearer paid him a visit around the house. And who knows if that's what the conversation was about. I'm good to see him go. Most definitely my favourite player in this Nuno regime. Just for, you know, I know he blows hot and cold, but when he was hot, he was just unplayable at times. And we're going to miss his tenacity. And I feel like a game against City where, you know, you're not going to have as much of the ball, these are the sort of the games which are set up for someone like Diogo Jota. You know, he could go on to Liverpool and become an £80 million player, like Dan sort of alluded to. I think he's a fantastic boy for them in terms of, I think he's quite interchangeable at any of them front three, offers them a lot of cover. But for us, really, you know, someone we brought in for like, what, £12 million, and we're getting north of like 41 plus four, I think, with the four extra with appearances and all those other bonuses. It's great business for us. And yeah, big miss, but I think all round is a good deal for all parties.
Yeah, I think there's no doubting that you know, he's had a massive contribution to our rise over the last couple of years. Personally, for me, I think on his day, he was probably the best player that we had. The most dangerous forward, you know, carrying the ball. You know, you just, I've watched that clip of him turning Lucas Moura inside out at Spurs away last season, you know, umpteen times over the course of lockdown. And I will miss the way he used to carry the ball and stuff. But good luck to him. I really do hope it goes well for him up at Liverpool. Just not when he plays against the mighty Wolves, of course. Now, more excitingly, incomings. One confirmed, which is Kiana Hoover. He has played against us. We have seen him play very fleetingly as a 16-year-old. But a signing that I think addresses a couple of issues for us. He's versatile, like Nuno likes. Obviously, the wing-back position has been, publicised that we needed a bit of cover in that area, at least, if not a starter. So, what do we think about that one, guys? Jordan, what do you make of it?
I think from the fallout on Twitter, it shows that it's quite a bit of a astute business by us, really. My old man's a big Liverpool fan. He was gutted to see him go. I know he made his debut against us at, 16, I think it was, in that FA Cup game a couple of years ago. Obviously, someone that I highly rate. And I think there's an argument to say that yesterday when they played Chelsea, as good as Fabinho was at centre-half, he could have been in with a shout of actually starting from yesterday. Definitely addresses that, you know, that issue of, you know, right wing back until, you know, the big news broke of a certain someone from Barcelona might be getting on a Ryanair flight over here in the morning. But, you know, I think that with someone with his, by all means, raw talent and pace and his stature, I think that probably the right-sided centre-half position for his athleticism is probably something that is an upgrade on us, upgrade for us in terms of makes us stronger at the back as well. So I'm really excited to see him play, and I hope that over the next coming weeks, the upcoming weeks, should I say, that he'll get blooded in and given an opportunity.
Yeah, Hoops, do you see him featuring much, do you think?
I think so. I think, you know, we know how Nuno often introduces players, and sometimes it's a bedding in process. But yeah, I mean, like Jordan, really, I can only glean from sort of social media and sort of the general feeling from Liverpool fans, because I don't think he started for them in the league. But obviously, as you mentioned there, he's played in cup games for them. But 18, you know, and a lot of potential. So I think we've got a nice bit of experience there. In defence, but then we've got, you know, a mix of that, you know, with an exciting young talent. You know, he describes himself as a flying Dutchman, and I think somebody that can be a conventional wing back if he plays there or fill in at right centre half just gives us more options. So yeah, I think with that, and as you say, Nelson, who we've been linked to, which we may touch on in a moment, it looks really strong at the back, so I'm excited to see him play.
Does anyone know where the Flying Dutchman thing comes from? I've no idea what.
It's like a stereotypical, phrase. I don't know. I'll have to be Googling it then.
There was a pub down in Warstones called the Flying Dutchman.
Yes, that's no Indigo. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Of course. That is an upgrade. So hopefully this Flying Dutchman is an upgrade.
It's a legendary ghost ship, Gully, which was said to never be able to make port, doomed to sail the oceans forever.
Deep.
That is deep.
That wasn't in Warstones.
There's a lot of ships that pass in the night in Warstones.
What a kind of euphemism must that be? Dan, what do you think of this one? Good signing.
It seems to be sort of the epitome of a classic Nuno signing, where his versatility seems to be quite strong. The credibility that he's got from all, I've not seen a Liverpool fan sort of comment on social media the same way we would do if, say, Conor Ronan was sold, if you know what I mean. So they obviously rate him. He obviously has got the ability. And my only concern is with the rumours that you hear about Liverpool talking about Rian Bruce, is that they haven't got a buyback clause on the kid, which makes me think maybe they only see him reaching a certain level. I mean, he's been behind Trent and Nico Williams, so he was never going to get first team league appearances, was he, at this age? But from the credibility that Liverpool fans give him, he does seem a good boy, yeah?
Yeah, they seem to be doing quite a bit of business with some of their youngsters. I mean, they managed to get X amount for Dominic Solanke, which I find amazing. But I'm quite looking forward to this one just because, you know, he's obviously been reared up in the Ajax Academy when he was a youngster. So maybe we've got a bit of total football coming our way as well, which is always nice to have. But we'll move on to an unconfirmed one for now, but I think one we're all expecting and one we're all excited about as well. The true answer to our right wing back problems, and that's Nelson Semedo. Dan, I'll start with you. We're signing a player from Barcelona. He knows and has played with Lionel Messi. How does that make you feel? Yeah.
Is that the one who's always in Cristiano Ronaldo's shadow, the little bloke?
No, this is the
the fraud, the coward.
Yeah, yeah,
want to play in the Premier League.
He's the bearded and short haired fraud, as opposed to the bald one.
Talk about me or Messi here?
Yeah. Nelson Semedo.
I've made my opinions very clear about Barcelona and my affinity to Real Madrid in the past, but even I'll admit, you don't play over 100 games for Barcelona if you're a mug. The Barcelona fans might not like him, but it's because he's not Dani Alves, not because he's a poor player. It just shows, I think, what Hoop said on Twitter the other day, it's just nice that we're not buying players from Bohemians anymore. And a team like Barcelona, he's got to be a top player. Well, to see how it goes. Obviously, it's a lot of money for a fallback, but that's if we're going to break top six, that's the sort of money we need to be spending there.
Hey, if he has half the career Matt Doherty had for Wolves, he'll have done well.
We all agree in that sort.
Clearly.
Well, yeah. I mean, but then in terms of an upside, I mean, yeah. If in terms of expectations, they're probably a lot more heightened than they were when we had Doc come in, but. As Stan was saying, it's just testament to where we're at. But, you know, 26, looking to reach his peak, hopefully, you know, over 100 games, as Stan's alluded to for Barca. Yeah, just really excited. So I think we've really got a nice mix in that defence now. And I'm going to kind of be interested to see over the course of the season what that first 11 will look like, particularly defensively, and how many of these new signings will become regulars, and perhaps one or two of the mainstays may have to make way, because these aren't players that are going to, I wouldn't suspect, are going to sit on the bench. That I would expect. I mean, who do you think? I mean, it'll come in instantly, I guess, obviously, right wing back for Adama, but we've got lots of options. So, you know, I think we're recording this after a loss to Man City, but I'm just really excited to see these new players bed in.
Jordan, I've got one question for you, mate. How happy are you that we've signed another Portuguese international?
I suppose it's becoming the norm now, isn't it? We're even signing Brazilians who speak Portuguese, which is, you know, seems to be like the new national language or native language of Wolverhampton. So, I'm all for it, and I love to see everyone getting pissy about it as well. You know, everyone saying, "Oh, Wolves signed another Portuguese player again." Well, where were they when Mick McCarthy signed Anthony Ford and Kevin Foley and Kevin Doyle and Stephen Hunt and all these other Irish, you know, bandwagon players? It didn't matter because we were shit then. But now, obviously, we're buying quality in. All of a sudden, it's a big old. Oh, what about the squad registrations and all this sort of stuff? Like, ultimately, if you're a good fisherman, you fish in the right pond, don't you? So, you know, they know the players inside out, you know, and why spend that money on an untried and tested player when, you know, you know them. Nuno might have been around him, or some of the coaching staff might have been around him at some point during his career. Yeah, like, it's a no-brainer for me. Ultimately, he comes in, he'll improve the team. We've gone from Doherty to Semedo, which is mental. But like Coop said, really, I'm looking forward to seeing these new players bed in now. And I think that we could have a real exciting back line. I think we could be even more expansive in transition. Mm. So I'm looking forward to seeing it.
I do enjoy how all the homegrown player quota experts have all come out all of a sudden trying to work out how the hell we're doing this. It's quite... seeing them tie themselves up in knots trying to work out the where we're going to fall foul of something eventually. It's really quite amusing. As if the football club has no idea that these rules exist. Or something.
But the thing is, though, Gully, if anyone plays Football Manager, you just know that you just can't register 25. So we could have 18 Portuguese players.
Absolutely.
No problem. Or 17. It don't matter.
Leave the space.
Yeah. They need to do some research before they start slagging us off.
Play some Football Manager, boys and girls. Go on, read it.
But you're right. And what Jordan was saying there was a bit. I remember, like, as you all will, in the McCarthy era, when there was a bit of criticism to say only signs Irish players, or he signs players from Reading, or he signs players from Sunderland. You sign players who you're comfortable with, that you've got the knowledge of, and you know, and just to follow on from Jordan there. It won't just be Nuno, it'll be these coach and staff. They'll know these players. They'll work with these players. That, you know, the players themselves, you know, it wouldn't be unheard of that he'll go and speak to Patricio and say, well, what's he like in training? You know, what's his character like? So it's all good. I think Wolves fans have got an issue with it, as long as you're successful. And at the end of the day, you look at some of the poor value of say, British players, then it's a no-brainer to bring these type of players in.
Absolutely. I think it goes further than that, in the sense that Nelson Semedo, you know, a Champions League footballer, doesn't blink, look twice at Wolves if we don't have that kind of bed of Portuguese, you know, almost a community at the club at the moment. So, you know, he'll off the back of that. And I'm sure we're all really excited to see him play. And I personally think this is the first signing really that improves the starting lineup, despite, you know, the fact we made some good moves. So I think it's a really good step in the right direction. Yeah. All right, guys, that'll do for the first half. We'll move on to the Man City defeat after the break. Hi, guys, welcome back to the Wolves Fancast. Now, we are recording on the evening of our 3-1 defeat at home to Man City. Obviously, second game of the season, goals from Gabriel Jesus, Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden put paid to us. Obviously, we pulled one back with Raul Jimenez in the second half. Dan, what were you expecting much from today at kickoff? And in hindsight, do you think we deserved anything more from the game?
I think this is why people hate us the most, is that we always speak in hindsight. You look at the sort of the team lineup at kickoff, and I think a few of us were like, "Oh, we needed maybe an extra man in midfield, or we need Den Donker." It's all, I think we had the comment the other week: Den Donker and one, Neves and Moutinho against that City midfield was always going to be a tough task. I've said in the WhatsApp earlier, I think without fans in the stadium, Man City will steamroll teams, because it's just constant training ground drills for them. They do it day in, day out. The way they pass teams off the pitch, they know when to press, they know when to sit. They are an unbelievable team to watch. And I think if you don't get at them and you haven't got fans there to start putting pressure on them, they'll just... play off the pitch like we saw in the first half.
Hoops, I mean, obviously they were missing the likes of Aguero, Laporte, Gundogan. I mean, they had to delve into the depths of their team and put John Stones out, for God's sake. I mean, obviously they're really scraping the barrel there, aren't they?
But you know what? He had a good game, didn't he, in fairness, Stones, today? But yeah, I mean, to your point, I fancied us, because generally we've had a decent record against City over the last few years, no more so than last season. You know, coming off at least a sharp league performance, and you don't know how City are going to start, then I fancied us. I think that it is a really good point about the crowd, and I think there are going to be certain sides that it actually will work for or against this season in terms of crowds. And I think... you know, when you look at the game last year when we were 2-0 down, and we all know the atmosphere within that ground and that expectation and that feel, and it sounds very cheesy, but it was as if, you know, the fans were sort of, you know, blowing the goal in. You know, it was that much of a force within the stadium. So you take that out of it, and then you have an environment which can be similar to a training ground, and you're up against, you know, real high technical world-class players, then probably we are going to be a little bit short. But going into the game, I still fancied us, because I just fancied us against anyone, because, you know, that's kind of what we're about, that we're there, we've got, you know, players that really teams should be fearing more than we should be fearing them. But look, well, you know, we perhaps all go into detail in the moment and between us, but first off, we looked very ordinary. I think we were our own worst enemy at times, but City were very good, and they look like, even at this early stage, that they're going to have a very good season. So, but yeah, going into the game, I fancied us, and I saw no reason why we couldn't have got a result. And as it's turned out, that I still feel that way.
Yeah, I think you know, Nuno's obviously spoken of this new cycle and a new approach as well. Jordan, do you think there was a discernible difference between the way we tackled Man City last season and today?
I just don't think we were allowed to put our stamp on the game at all in that first half. They wanted to do us, didn't they? Let's be honest. I mean, we did the double against them last year. You know, we always give them a difficult game, and they know they need to turn up tonight. And like I said earlier, I thought they were breathtaking at times in that first half. Similarly to Hoops, so I looked at that Man City team today, and this is going to sound a bit silly, but that's the weakest City side we've played since we've been in the Premier League on paper for me. Laporte out, Aguero out. David Silva's gone. I still don't think they've replaced Kompany. And a big one again today, like Gundogan, being out with coronavirus. He always plays in every big game for City. So, and he would have definitely played tonight, I'm sure of it. So him being out as well, I thought, you know what, I really fancied this as well. And you know what, they come out first half, and they're just, yeah, they were, like I said, they were breathtaking. I think Nuno's obviously come out about saying he wants to implement this new style of play. And I sort of said it in jest that I can't really see how this is working at half time. But you know what? It was just great to how good Man City were. And I think it did show sort of in the second half the qualities that we've got and some of the play and the chances we've created that, you know, we can go toe-to-toe with Man City. We can go toe-to-toe with these big teams. We don't need to say that. We already know all this. But you can't give teams like that 2 goal advantages and get away with it. I know we did last year, but you're not going to get away with it every time. So, yeah, unfortunately, we're just beaten by a better team tonight.
Yeah, I think it was noticeable at half-time, scrolling through social media and your various WhatsApp groups and that. Everyone was quite comfortable with the idea that, you know, Man City were just very difficult to live with, no matter how annoying the commentary was in that regard. But before any of the goals actually went in, I thought it was perhaps a significant moment where Marcel was obviously taken off injured. No real idea of what's happened there. Do you think that had an impact on the game in any way?
I do to some extent, because I think you can visibly see it as well in the second half. I think Ruben Vanagra's confidence has completely gone. So in terms of, obviously, Johnny's gone out with a long-term injury, and I don't think he's been good enough at times for us in a Wolves shirt, Vanagra. But after that severe game, he was arguably our man of the match. And I think that he probably anticipated that he was going to get a long run in the team. Even when we signed Marcel, you know, played the best part of the season at Lyon at left centre-half. So he sort of felt that he'd possibly like slot into there. But then to see him play left wing back ahead of you, and he obviously played, you know, he was brilliant against Sheffield United. Great player, great signing. But I think it was quite visible for me anyway that I think Vinagre's just lost his confidence. Like that first year we had him, when we went and played City in the Cup and he was doing his step overs and Rabonas and whatever else he was doing to Kyle Walker, making him look silly. I mean, he tried it a few times tonight, and just every time he got the ball, I don't think he knew what he was doing with it. So I do think it had a bit of a, well, I do think it had a big impact on the game, because Marcel would have made us a bit more solid down that left-hand side. And maybe with him being a bit more solid and maybe able to tuck in, it might have meant that Traoré could have pushed a bit further up the pitch as well. So I do think it had a, I do think it had an impact on the game, but how good City were, who knows? It's hard to say to change the result, but I do think it definitely impacted the game.
I think for me, though, George, I think defensively, a bigger impact was the performances, particularly in the first half, of Bolly, Codes, and obviously Sace, which, you know, was noted with the challenge. So I agree with you and Vinagre that, look, you know, I was a massive fan of him. And, you know, I think we all were in terms of when he came onto the scene, and we're itching for him to come in. And, you know, we see him offensively, you know, was changing games when he first brought onto the scene. And we thought perhaps after that Sevilla game, it was a sort of a coming of age, you know, match for him. So I think, yeah, he made some suspect decisions. But for me, I was just more concerned that I just thought those three centre halves, Sace, I think, got better second half. But for me, I think, you know, we look particularly shaky amongst the three in the centre rather than out wide.
I would agree with that as well. I think I just meant sort of from a, I suppose from a defensive point of view, like I say, I don't think Sace, well, all Sace or Bolly particularly had great games. But, you know, there's an argument there that maybe with Marcel on that left-hand side, that ball that got slipped in. Again, I'm not laying any blame down Vinagre at all, because it wasn't his fault. But I just think how well defended as a unit last week against arguably the best team in the league, them and Liverpool most certainly, having the change so early can disrupt your plans a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, City don't tend to need too much of a helping hand, but would you agree that we kind of helped them onto the score sheet to begin with in the first half?
I don't like throwing anyone under the bus, but it's like saying you've already got a mountain to climb with City being the team that they are, and giving a penalty away like that, you're just leaving yourself open to a beating. I don't think, like what the others have said, Bolly Sace and Cody had the greatest first half. I didn't think Cody did too bad, but I think a lot of his diagonal balls tonight were just a little bit off. I thought we found it hard to get out from the back because of how high they were pressing. If you had a look during the Sky Sports footage when they had the positional map, it looked like Man City were playing a 2-4-4 formation, how high up the pitch they were playing against us. And I think that showed with how hard we had finding to get out from the back, getting the ball up to him, as I think his lack of touches was shown compared to the Sheffield United game. And he was literally isolated in that first half. And I think that's why we need that extra man in midfield, just to keep the ball a bit better and try and break our way up the field a bit better. It's disappointing overall, the defensive performance, but the same, we've played a really good team tonight, and I think that they will push Liverpool a lot harder this season.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on the fullbacks being really, really high for them. I think when you look at it from a kind of aspirational point of view for us as a club, the intensity and the bravery that they show in pushing men on to get the ball back onto us, you know, I think we're trying it a bit more this season. You noticed it a little bit more against Sheffield United. We're pressing a bit higher. We're probably playing a bit of a higher line, but we're still a little bit, we're still tentative compared to City. I mean, Walker and Mendy to win backs, and there really was nowhere for them to go. And the usual balls Cody would pick out to each wing back, you know, the little diagonals, there weren't options for him. And when you stop our wing backs getting into the game, then, you know, a lot of our attacking play does seem to falter.
Yeah, I've said that numerous times over the years. A lot of the time, Nuno's strikers are his wing backs. It's all about these tactical pattern plays, which ends up with our odd wing back being in the attacking in the box to finish off the set piece, as it is. Stifle walls at that area, we will come unstuck. I think this is why with the new cycle we need to just have a bit more of a bedding in period and see where we go from there, hopefully with a Semedo and hopefully another wing back in at left, we can push on.
Whose fucking idea was it to sell Doherty?
Sorry for Vinagre, because he is, like you've mentioned, he is void of confidence now. I mean, the clip when he was coming on for Marcel, it looked like Nuno was trying to give him a bit of a pep talk, and he just looked as if to say, I really don't want to go on. It didn't look like he wanted to go on. I think Nuno tried to give him a quick like slap around the head to like G him up, and he was just having none of it. It's a shame, really, because there is a player there.
Yeah, there definitely is.
I mean, I don't know kind of where his future lies. I think, you know, there were links, weren't they, that he was going to move on. Was it Monaco, I think, was linked, you know, and obviously what some of the Mendes clubs he's been linked with as well. But we'll see. But I think absolutely on a positive, we've got some good options now defensively. So, but if Vinagre is a part of it, then it means that we're doing well.
Yeah, Hoops, I was going to say, the second goal goes. Any question marks over Patricio's involvement in that, do you think?
I don't know. I think I probably wouldn't be so critical on Patricio there. I'd have to watch it back, to be honest. But, I think it was just a stage in the game where, you know, it was inevitable. So, yeah, I'd have to look it back, but I wouldn't put too portion of blame on Patricio.
Could have been 10 if it wasn't for him.
What's that, sorry?
Could have been 10 if it wasn't for him.
Yeah, he made a couple of saves. I wouldn't necessarily say... I mean, when you recall chances, De Bruyne went through and he made a save from him off that. Up until the point Saez gives away the penalty, I mean, yes, we're being overrun. Yes, they're keeping possession.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily carving us apart at every single opportunity. The thing I was mentioning about the second goal, pushing out, and I think he kind of makes up Sterling's mind for him with that action just by giving him the option to square the ball. If Sterling has to try and finish it from that angle, I think it's a difficult finish for him. Not necessarily, you know, the most difficult. Yeah, on his weaker side. And Patricio says to him, go on, try and beat me. And he's a good shot stopper at the end of the day. So he could have done backing himself a little bit more there. But Jordan, going 2-0 half time, how positive were you at that point in the game? Obviously, we were 2-0 down last season to City in slightly different circumstances. But did you feel optimistic about the second half in any way, or was he just kind of beholden to City with the way they were playing?
No, there was no positivity there whatsoever. I was dreading coming on this podcast thinking I'd have to talk about a 6-0 defeat, to be honest with you. But you know what? Credit to the players, really. We, second half, we had our chances. And, I mean, there's obviously Jimenez, Potence one when he went through 1-on-1. He also could have had a shot, couldn't he, when he let it roll for Neves. I've got no idea what was going on there. look, we've in the second half, we've gone toe-to-toe with Man City. And, yeah, tonight was, again, although we beat them twice last year, I suppose you could look at it as a little bit of a free hit. I want to sort of move away from that now. We're in our third season. But it was a little bit of a free hit because, you know, they were the favourites for the game, rightly so. But if we play like we did the second half, we've got a run of like 5 games, I believe it is now, which on paper, there's no reason why we can't win all 5. Especially playing once a week. So, you know, by the end of October, I'm really positive what I saw in the second half and against Sheffield United, that we could be this season's Leicester of last season sort of thing, that we could actually be up there and there or thereabouts coming into the Christmas period. And that what I've seen in the second half today has done more enough to excite me about the team moving forward, especially with the additions to come in as well.
Dan, any of the chances in the second half particularly stick in your mind that are, you know, haunting your nightmares a little bit right now?
I think the chance that Powden says where he's tried to lift it over Edison, the idea is completely there, but I do a lot better. I mean, I have to keep going over it, lads, but if that's me on goal, it's in the net.
If that's Jota in on goal, is it in the net?
Oh no, he'd have tripped our rings up like he did against Everton.
Oh Dan, stop the hate, man. Stop the hate.
He's gone, lads. Stop bigging him up. He scored 7 league goals last season and it was against Farmers.
But I mean, it's a valid point, I think, and I will make it that someone is going to have to pick up the slack that Jota and Doherty left. They were quite key goal scorers for us. And yes, we created chances, great. You know, honestly, we're evolving our attacking game a little bit based on the second half that we saw today. Neto, Pedence, both really heavily influential in that as well. But, you know, they do need to start putting those chances away. And I know we're only 2 games into the season, but it's still a question mark that we'll need kind of covering.
Yeah, I mean, there was frustration with the chances. And I mean, in fairness, Pedence had a lovely chance just prior to that sort of on the turn chance, which wasn't far away. Jimenez did, you know, sort of one where he just sort of drew the ball, you know, off the back post. So there was definitely chances in there. I thought Neto and Pedence were pretty average first half, but I thought they were better second half. And I think Adama, I saw get a bit of flack, but, you know, I actually didn't think he had a bad game as it went on and looked most likely to. So I think we've got some good options there. We also know we've got options, you know, in set pieces, as we saw, you know, in the first league game. So I'm not concerned with the chances missed. It's disappointing, but I'm not concerned with our goal output this year. I think we'll be okay in that respect.
Talking a bit more positively, our goal was a nice bit of quality, especially from Pedence dropping the nutmeg on Kevin De Bruyne as well. What did you make of that, Jordan?
Sexy. To be honest, it was nice, wasn't it? And I think that we saw flashes of Pedence last season where you could quite clearly see his quality on the ball that he had. And who knows what might have happened if he didn't get suspended for that severe game. But as soon as you get him on the ball and we're on the front foot, I think he's a terrific player, honestly. And he made De Bruyne look silly for about 5 seconds, didn't he, before he went and put one in the back of the net and obviously got an assist and man of the match as well. But we'll just focus on those 5 seconds and say he made De Bruyne look like a mug, didn't he? Through his legs. A cracking delivery as well. And I think he's going to have a real big year for us this year. And where you talk about that goal output, and he might not necessarily have the goal threat of output of Jota or, you know, Doherty. But you'd still back him to score at least 10 goals. But I think he's going to create a hell of a lot more than what those two did in terms of assists.
Yeah, that's 2 assists in 2 games. Now, I mean, the goal, I don't know if you thought this, Jimenez seemed to put pace on the ball with the header as well. It's a ridiculously powerful header from that angle to get it past Edison as well. Now, there has been talk that one particular midfield maestro of ours might be on the wane in terms of his powers. I don't know what you guys think. João Moutinho seemed to be a little off the pace today. Any of you guys agree?
Yeah, I think probably being kind, aren't we? And I think we're being kind because of the status and the esteem that, you know, we hold him in, and he's deserves to be on that pedestal. You know, from what we've seen as a footballer, he's been amazing. But I am kind of starting to talk a little bit past tense with him, because I thought there were times last season where he looks off the pace. And I think we were just touching on that just before coming on for record. That is probably inevitable, you know, with sort of his age and the demands of the game. But he was poor, wasn't he? And I think the key this year is, I don't suspect if we are to be successful that he's going to feature as heavily as he has, because I don't think he's got it in him to replicate what he's done previously.
Seen in the Wolves shirt for his technical ability and the way he can dictate games, but it just looks like a task for him to get into sprints at times. And going back to what I said earlier, not having that extra man in midfield, I didn't do think allowed him and Neves to play their best level tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I might be stretching this analogy a bit, but you know, like if you've organised to like meet someone and they've called you, you're in the kind of same vicinity, but they've called you to say, where are you? And you can see them, but they can't see you. And they're kind of spinning around in circles, kind of looking for you. That's what I thought João Moutinho's performance was like today. Just kind of constantly turning around, wondering where the hell the ball was. And you know, it's no shame to be kind of, you know, had rings run around you by Manchester City. Obviously, they're an unbelievable football team, somehow put together by this ball fraud. But, you know, it does seem to be that he's kind of, you know, his legs are kind of slowing down on him a little bit. And I made the point last time when I was on the pod, Dendonka plus one, I think, is the way forward for me. And it might be the case that Moutinho is a kind of a 1 in 3, 1 in 4 kind of player at the moment. Because Neves needs to be taking a little bit more responsibilities. I think he's the future of the club as it stands.
I think without... Let me try and give you a different analogy without being too derogatory to him. Man City were on Wi-Fi and he was on 3G.
he was on dial-up.
It was just that far off the pace. And when you've got a team that can press and can dictate a game like Man City can with Kevin De Bruyne, he just looked like he was struggling to get into sprints. And with a midfielder like Dendonka who can actually get about the pitch with a bit more energy and a bit more physicality, I just don't think him and Neves really stood a chance against that midfield. Rodri and Fernandinho, they're really top centre midfielders who can control the game and then just let Kevin De Bruyne run rings what he needs to do. I think they have got a superb midfield, and without that extra man, we were always going to struggle tonight for me.
Yeah. Sorry, Gully.
Fernandinho, 35-year-old himself. I mean, it's not always about the running, is it, I guess?
I just thought...
Not necessarily.
Yeah. I'm with Dan, though. I think, you know, I do champion Donk a lot, but I just think, you know, it's what he adds, and I think him and one other just kind of just makes the balance. I think, I don't know how to describe going with Neves and Moutinho against Man City, but it was kind of like, wow, okay, you really fancy it, because I felt as if we should have been a little bit more cautious and added a bit more steel. And I think Moutinho fries when Dendonka's in there, but I think the two of them against lesser sides, it's not an issue, but against that side, I think, yeah, I don't think that that worked tonight.
Jordan, any other notable performances for you, good or bad?
I thought Patricio was good. I know you sort of said you thought he might have been at fault with the second goal, but I thought Patricio was very good with what he had to do today. Bolly, I don't like doing all this, but like, I thought Bolly was a bit sloppy. I mean, you could pick out a few of them, couldn't you, really? Ultimately, it just wasn't our night in that first half. And with Moutinho, I mean, I know he sort of was a bit of a passenger at times tonight, but I don't think Moutinho's done at all. I think he's a high-quality footballer. And the big difference is, like you say, you know, Fernandinho's playing for Man City at 35, but don't half make a difference when you've got the ball and you're on the front foot. And maybe he did get it wrong tonight, Nuno, in the fact that it should have played Dendonka, or, you know, could have played Dendonka, Neves and Vitinha, or whatever you wanted to do. It's good to look back on hindsight and say we could have done this, could have done that. But yeah, I think that there's still quality left in Moutinho, and I still think there's a bit of life left in the old dog yet.
Yeah, I think I think that's a good point. I think in terms of you know, when you look at Moutinho and you look at an age factor, I think it all depends on perhaps opposition. So didn't work tonight, but you know, I'm not sort of writing the guy off, but I just think it just makes us aware, if we weren't aware, which I'm sure we are, and perhaps the Vitinha signing is testament to that, that he will need to be replaced ultimately.
Well, I guess that kind of leads us to a man of the match award of sorts, guys. So, Ryan, who would you give yours to?
It's a tough one, isn't it? I'll probably get a bit of criticism for this, but I don't mind. I would actually think Adama for perseverance, because I think didn't work out from first half, and it could have been someone that could have been taken off sort of early doors, but I think he persevered and he went on the offensive front foot. So yeah, not a great performance by anyone, but I'll go with Adama.
Hello?
Anyone else?
Oh, Dan?
I think we were all trying to work out who was going to give you slack for picking Adama, to be honest. Because, like what you said, I thought first half, I don't think any of them had a great first half, but his perseverance, he was constantly a threat to them. Once I think he had Jorge Mendes. I wish he was playing left back for Man City. I thought he had Mendy on the ropes again at times during the match. There was a few times Fernandinho and Rodri had to come over to, and he skipped past them with relative ease. I don't think there's any negativity towards picking Adama. For me, I just think Paulins was our main threat all night long. I thought every time he got on the ball, he was looking likely to make something happen. I love a nutmegs, and with that assist, I think that's just what edged it for me.
Jordan?
Yeah, I think for me as well. I think, again, I did say no one really did a lot in that first half. Second half alone, I thought every time Pedence got the ball, he just looked the most likely to unlock something. And I'm hoping or praying that he has a big season for us this year.
He's a very good asset for all the fantasy football managers out there who need a cheap midfielder at the moment.
No, he's building himself up a reputation, that's for sure. I've actually thought Cody had a pretty good game, in spite of the fact that Sace and Bolly seem to be losing their heads around him, to be honest. I can't really think of anything that Cody...
He wasn't at fault for anything. I struggle to ever pick a defender as man of the match when you concede three.
Yeah. No. Pedence as well, I think. Yeah, he was pretty exceptional. If he sticks that left foot shot on the turn in the top corner, I mean, that would have been an unbelievable goal to cap off that performance. But we'll try and get that defeat out of our system. And there's only one way to go about that, boys. I think that's by a little Dan quiz.
Correct.
So over to you, mate.
So as always, there's three of you tonight. You all get two questions each. One's a general knowledge Wolves and one's the answer smash. So I'll come to you, Gully, first. 9 years ago this week, Wolves lost 2-1 at Anfield. Who headed in his own net past Wayne Hennessy that day?
Oh, it's one of two. I think it was Richard Stearman.
That's incorrect.
Oh, no.
You will Hoops or Jordan, want to have a quick guess? I'm not giving you the point for getting it right, but I'll let you have a guess.
Whoa. I'll go with Berra.
I thought if it wasn't Stearman, I was going to go Berra, yeah.
We're going to have a quick guess, Hoops.
Ward?
No, it was Roger Johnson.
No. Oh, of course it was.
It was one of two. You all had three guesses and none of you got it right. This is the Wolves Fancast.
That's the standard.
Ted is trying to erase him from the memory, though, that's all.
Yes, yeah. This one's a bit of a tough one, but it's yours, Hoops, unfortunately.
Of all the people you could
have, have you strategically picked them out?
I've dedicated questions this week because it's usually a farce and it's already begun that way, so I'm going to keep on moving. Name the famous Hollywood actor which visited Man City's captain and training ground in 2015, who shares the surname of a Wolves fullback from 2010.
Oh.
For those hackers into Zoom, Gully's raised his hand in some sort of acknowledgement that he may know the answer, but he probably doesn't.
You reckon?
Wolves fullback 2010. Hollywood actor.
Share the same surname.
Oh.
The cogs are working.
They are working well.
I think he's on 3G like Moutinho.
The cogs are in place, but no, I'm going to have to pass.
Gully or Jordan, do you want to have a guess?
I'll let Gully go because he's put his hand up so politely.
The only fullback I can think of is Yella Van Damme, so Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, that would be the correct answer. Point there.
No points.
No rules.
You doubted me. You doubted me and you was wrong.
Okay, so Jordan, here's your question. 16 years ago this month, so you were 13.
Yeah.
Wolves loaned who from Manchester City?
16 years ago, 2004. Was it Michael Bischoff?
It was. Oh, great shout, that is. That is
I might get technical shout. And say it's Mikel Bischoff, but rarely we get points on this quiz anymore, so I'm going to give it you.
What a player he was, by the way.
Mikel Bischoff, and then we signed him again on loan in March, I believe. Anyway, this is the answer smash part. So, first question to you, Gully. Name the money-saving expert who played on the wing for Wolves under Mick McCarthy.
I've got this one.
Oh, I think I might know this one.
Yeah.
Oh, what's his name?
I'm going to give you 8 seconds using the...
Played on the wing on...
Yeah.
Oh, I could just think of... Is it Martin Lewis, the money-saving expert guy? Lou Scoburn? Martin Lewis Scoburn?
Oh, he's got it.
I'm going to give it, yeah, but just know next time my fingers had run out. So
get some more fucking fingers then.
So that's 1-1-0. Hoops, your question. Fullback signed from Sheffield Wednesday in 2005. Who's had stints in gangs. Sorry, I'm going to have to reword this. Fullback signed from Sheffield Wednesday in 2005 and famous English actor who's had stints in gangs in Afghanistan.
Ah, I forgot this. Yeah.
The cogs are working again.
Oh.
He's scratching his eyes. That means he's clawing at the brain.
I think it might be a Scottish fullback. Ross Kemp.
Where are your fingers now, Dan?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to cut your hoops. I'm afraid.
Cut me off.
I started moaning. Answer was Maurice Ross.
Maurice Ross Kemp. Yeah.
Maurice Ross Kemp.
Yeah, former Rangers player and Sheffield Wednesday. Jordan, if he gets this, wins this week's quiz, and it's probably the easiest one of the lot. Premier League manager who would like to fill me in. And I'm going to go with the 10 fingers.
Oh, yeah.
Craig David. Oh, my God, I can't think. Oh, my God.
Who are we playing Moisey? This weekend, Jordan?
It's Moisey.
Yeah, Craig David Moyes, yeah.
The ferryman. It's the ferryman.
We're going to have to go to a tiebreak. And this week's tiebreaker is Sunday's fixture with West Ham will be the 66th competitive fixture between the two clubs. How many have Wolves won so far? So, if you can both... Oh, Jordan, you ain't even got video, you stain.
Hang on, wait there. I need you to
show me your answers on the screen when I prompt you, and then I will read them out, and whoever wins this week's quiz. It's a sin.
Just repeat it quickly, sorry.
Sunday's fixture with West Ham will be 66th competitive fixture between the two clubs. How many have Wolves won so far? Okay, Jordan has gone for 31. Gully has gone for 18. This week's winner is Gully. The correct answer was 22. So Gully was 4 off.
You obviously thought we were a lot better than we actually are, Jordan. Just because we've been beating West Ham every time we came back up, yeah. I don't think it
well, I was thinking about when we beat when Paul Lynch scored and ran like in front of the West Ham fans 4-2 back in the day as well.
Big time. Why did West Ham ever have Jimmy Walker in goal? He was my height.
Walsall legend, man.
Yeah. He had a decent career for himself, really, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think he's still he was goalkeeping coach at West Ham for ages as well.
Yeah. Jimmy Walker,
football manager knowledge.
Ian Bennett for Blues. All my height, and I don't know where they made a career in goal. Unbelievable.
Lee Camp as well.
Is that not a slight exaggeration, Dan, to say they were your height?
Yeah. But for comedic purposes, I'm going to go with it.
No wonder he loves Daniel Pedent so much.
He's only got an inch on me. And I reckon that's probably because I'm 33 now and I've shrunk a little bit.
It's already started.
Yeah. Hair went at 23, height at 33.
What's next?
Bald.
In a manscaping incident.
Yeah. That's it.
All right, boys. Well, that quiz went as well as we could hope for. Finally, to wrap up, we've got some questions from Twitter Corner. Sorry, just getting them up.
Can I just say it was really good to see that the Wolves women team got back to winning ways this week after being unduly robbed of promotion last season. A massive 6-0 victory. I mean, setting the standards again. Well done to them.
Which brings nicely on to this tweet, Dan, from at KingWolf84. After last season, how good was it to see this tweet? And it's the full-time score from the Wolves women game at the weekend, which is 6-0 against, was it Leamington? Hashtag LEA, I'm not sure who that is. No, it's Leafield Athletic. But yeah, well, I think we all were made aware of the farce of the null and void situation for the Wolves women last season. And they were posting those kind of scorelines on a regular basis, from what I recall. Absolutely tearing teams apart every week. So nice to see they're all back at it and doing what they do best.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. You know, with the Wolves women, they probably don't get the recognition they deserve because they had a great season. And I think, you know, as Gully's referenced there, it was crazy that, you know, they couldn't get the recognition for what was an amazing record-breaking season. So hopefully they'll get their just rewards this year.
Question from Lynx Wolf. Has anyone been able to watch the Renaissance video without getting a little something in their eye? It's brilliant. Yeah, I remember this was shared in the WhatsApp group before I realised that it was tweeted out by the club, but it's a bit of a lovely watch, isn't it, boys?
Yeah, I think that's something that the media team at Wolves have actually got right in terms of the last few years. I think since Fosun come in, they've got a lot of things right with the club and re-engaging the fans and getting us back on side. But in terms of the media stuff and, like, you know, the social media stuff, the tweets and sort of what they're doing now, like sort of the match day live interactive stuff, I think it's a massive plus for us. And I think that the sense I get from it all, I feel like we're a massive club with it. It feels like we're doing things proper now. And yeah, testament to the social media team and the production team for putting a video like that together. It was truly, truly breathtaking, I guess. It was, you know, quite emotional. So hopefully we've got some more memories put on there at the end of the year.
I don't tend to cry at football videos because I'm hard as nails. I might cry in like the ground when we win promotion or win a big game or a big goal goes in, but watching videos back, it just makes me more reflective to what could have been. So I don't really get teary based. It's more frustration than tears.
I just remembered that there's a YouTube channel, Wolves Babble, who would put together like a compilation of the Nuno season. And I've watched it. I mean, I'm sure it's all legitimate how he managed to source all those clips and everything. But I remember I watched that on loop, like after we got promoted, just because it was such a, you know, inspirational kind of video to watch. Maybe they've hired him to do that work secretly without any of us knowing. Good on you, boys. Keep them coming. One last question, guys, from Andy Smith. Over the next two seasons, who are the five current first teamers likely to be at risk? Tough one, given we've only got about six players. But what do we reckon?
We're saying Bolly will be like mid 30s by then. Well, Matinho will be gone by then, won't he? So that's two.
Yeah.
Jimenez will be gone. That's three. Neves will be gone because Faust and asset stripping. I'm joking.
Investment firm. They're going to go at some point.
I mean, it can happen. I think Hoops mentioned it the other week and I laughed at him, but with this new cycle, it wouldn't surprise me if Cody's gone in 5 years.
Yeah, I think, look, we've shown, you know, or Nuno's shown, it's there's no place for sentiment. I think Sace may go sooner rather than later, which might surprise a lot of people, but I think he will. I think he'll be naturally moved on. I think Matinho as well. And others will naturally go. But as I said it earlier, you know, I think it's going to be interesting. I think the side that we put out tonight will look very different come the end of the season. So I think that will naturally show who perhaps is moving on and who's staying the course.
And there, two seasons down the line, will be Oscar Burr still filling the 19th man squad position.
Roderick Miranda still on the books.
Yeah, Leo Bonatini. They're all still there. Hidden, tucked away in a corner of the training ground, ready to be shipped out on loan.
Conor Ronan signs an 8-year contract and goes to Grasshopper.
Yeah. Yeah, and everyone's just... I reckon he's still got a future at this club, lads. I reckon he'll come back.
Yeah. And John Ruddy's still the cup goalkeeper.
One more loan out.
Something's still changed, but some things just won't, boys. And I think that's a nice note to leave it on. Thanks for your time, gentlemen. I hope you've all enjoyed the episode, guys. We'll bye from Hoops.
Bye-bye.
Good night from Dan.
Bye-bye.
And it's adios from Jordan.
Adios, kids. Stay in school.
See you later, guys, and looking forward to speaking to you next time.